This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's never better than a Friday night, Audrey. Tune in to Tech Vibe Radio. I love it, man.
Too. And I love it when we have some guests. We're going to jump right in.
Not just guests, but like old friends and family stopping by the show.
Family.
Absolutely. A few weeks ago, the agency reached out and they said, hey, you know, the Marcel Shell Coalition, you know, the Shale Insight Conference is happening. I'm like, come on over. Let's talk about this because it's been too long and it's such an important conference. And we have Dave Spiegelmeyer here, who leads up the Marcellus Shale Coalition. So, Dave, thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. Coming up October 23 through 25 right here in Pittsburgh.
That's really what I want to hear, right here in Pittsburgh, too.
So what's the link to that to make sure that people can go?
Yeah, it's www.shaleinsight.com. It's pretty easy to find.
And I can remember shaleinsight.com.
So talk about the conference.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to have the opportunity to talk about the conference because it's been technology and innovation have been a driving force behind shale gas development. A lot of folks would have called us boom and bust, and this conference gives us an opportunity to talk about the optimism and what's taking place in the shale space across not only Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio, but across our country.
Absolutely.
Changed the outlook for energy supply globally, and we've got a lot to talk about.
And it was technology and ingenuity that brought the price point to where they can make money on a barrel of oil, right? And it was through fracking that they were able to get that price to where it's like, hey, you know, it doesn't have to be like $80 a barrel anymore. It can be 40 or whatever the number is. I'm not sure. But I just know that it's technology that allows us to keep, you know, being more efficient and more safe for the environment.
That's absolutely spot on. And it's natural gas to your home. To winter of 2008, natural gas prices delivered were $13.71. This past winter, they were less than $5 at every home across Pennsylvania at every utility.
And those are super real savings in your pocket. I mean, at the end of the day, I, as a homeowner, remember back in 2008, my gas bill being $300 a month, and now it's like $100. And so that's pretty actionable. Like, that's some money that you can go do something with. So
We're more than 60% dependent on foreign sources of oil. Today, we're less than 20%. It's a big winner for us. Geopolitical advantage of this is enormous.
Wait, are we even starting to export some of our gas?
Absolutely.
Now?
We are indeed.
So that's what's kind of crazy, right?
Well, it's not really crazy. It makes a ton of sense. We've gone from a period of scarcity and high price to a period of abundance and low cost. We've now got the ability to take and liquefy natural gas through a cryogenic or freezing process. And it's just a piece of what we produce in Pennsylvania, but we can put that on the global market.
Right.
You think about Vladimir Putin being able to squeeze the people of Ukraine with his pipeline infrastructure.
Right.
Today we can ship LNG into those areas and really change the nature of energy supply globally. One of the items we're going to talk about at the conference is alleviating global energy poverty. I mean, if you think about 1.3 billion people across the planet live without electricity every day, which means they have no refrigeration, no fresh water supply, no sewage because they have no pumps.
Exactly.
They heat their homes with wood or dung, and they cook their food with the same. They live shorter lifespans as a result. And today we can use now our abundance of energy produced primarily with the ability to turn a drill bit horizontally that's changed that outlook dramatically forever.
So what are some of the topics at the conference?
Yeah, alleviating energy poverty is a big one for us. Getting the benefits of using this natural gas locally. We've now got, as I talked about, this abundance and affordable supply.
Right.
How do we turn that, what I'd call straw, into gold for Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio? One thing I didn't mention, we merged this conference 2 years ago with West Virginia and Ohio, and it's now a more regional opportunity for us. But I think you guys have probably read a little bit about the study that was completed last October, Forge the Future, takes a look at the opportunities downstream if we use this natural gas supply here. It says by 2025, if we play our cards correctly, $60 billion of GDP growth, 100,000 new jobs for our region. We're already seeing some of that.
Right.
Shell facility today, you've got 1,900 people or more now working on that site, 31 cranes erected.
Know,
it's an exciting spot.
Cranes. Like, that's, something's happening.
Yeah, we don't see too many cranes around the region very often. We got 31 on one site alone. It's a pretty special time for us, and it's being able to take, the ethane being produced in the western part of Pennsylvania, eastern part of Ohio, and northern part of West Virginia, and taking that to develop plastic products.
So who should attend the conference?
I would tell you it's anyone that's interested in our space. It's downstream users. You asked the question about what are some of the other processes and things we're going to talk about. Power generation's big. We've basically gone from natural gas being the last choice for power generation to being a premier choice of power generation. And it's reduced our wholesale power prices by 41% in the PJM power grid. It's a big opportunity for us to talk about that. It's innovation and technology that has driven this industry. We spend a lot of time talking about it. Cybersecurity is another big one for us. Make sure our systems are safe and secure. We've got leaders in that space that are going to talk about that at the conference. We've just landed Andrew Wheeler, one of the new administrator of the EPA or acting administrator of the EPA, is going to be one of our keynote address speakers.
Great.
So he's going to talk about, again, using technology to clean our air, clean our water, and we're very much focused on that. We want to make sure it always gets done right, and we'll leave Pennsylvania a cleaner place than where we started.
It's always been the top priority. I know.
Absolutely.
I've known your organization for as long as it's been around. Like, that's one of the biggest concerns there, is maintaining the environment as far as that goes. Now, one thing I love about this conference is there's always a focus on innovation and the technology, as you were talking about.
You bet.
Tell me this year again, we got more of that going on.
Absolutely.
I love going through, being able to tour and see the companies and to see how this is actually in play.
We'll probably have more than 70 different exhibitors at the David L. Lawrence Convention Center looking at different technology. I will use as an example that came through our tech showcase and our partnership with the Ben Franklin Institute, is that the technology for the FLIR camera, which is it's a technological advancement, a camera that can be able to use to spot methane emissions. It's now being used by regulators across the country.
That's really great.
The seed of that fell with the Marcellus Shale Coalition. So we're real proud of that. In fact, we've had regulators out on site. They use those cameras to detect methane, as does our industry.
Right.
And the technology being deployed today, let's face it, everyone's worried about methane emissions. We are as well. It's the product that we sell. We don't want to go into the atmosphere. We want to go into the salesman.
Right.
Exactly.
Makes perfect sense.
Capture that and use it someplace
else.
That's
absolutely right. Let's burn it somewhere.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So the Shale Insight Conference, you go to shaleinsight.com.
Correct.
You can get all the details there. You can register there and get an idea as to what's hanging out. I mean, it's worth stopping by and checking out what's going on.
Yeah, they can also jump on our website, Marcellus Shale Coalition or MarcellusCoalition.org. They can find us there as well. A lot going on at this conference. A lot of folks need to check in on that, because I think they'll find a lot happening in the area of technology advancement.
So much
market
is advanced
growth
every year. Every year there's something new that's going on. And so that's happening October the 23rd to the 25th.
Right. That's correct.
Right around the corner, just about a month or so away. Really checked out. Dave, thanks for hanging out with us.
Nice
great being
you,
with
Dave.
You guys. It's always good to be with
it's
you.
Really great.
Thanks for giving us the opportunity to always talk about technology and advancement. As you guys led off with this, it's not hydraulic fracturing. We were fracking wells in the 1940s. It's the ability to turn a drill bit horizontally that's opened a global opportunity for energy for our country, for our state.
Right.
And
absolutely,
let's capitalize on that.
Well, thank you for your leadership.
Yeah. Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for having me. Really good being with you today.
Without a doubt. So, Audrey, we've got a lot in front of us tonight here on Tech 5 Radio.
Yeah, what do we have tonight?
So we have Chris Johnson from Teletracking stopping by for a double deep dive. We haven't done one of those in a while. I'm just saying.
We haven't.
Yeah, he's the new president there.
Wow, I'm going to have to get a cup of coffee.
You might get a couple cups of coffee. Get one for me, too, while you go out there. And, of course, we have Chris Pacioni from the Luma Institute.
Oh, that's nice.
Stopping by talking about
old times.
So,
that's great.
Yeah, it's like the show of Chris's in one Dave.
Yeah, so. Exciting night for you. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Sounds like a fun night for me.
For sure.
Good stuff. So we're coming back with more Tech Vibe, we swear.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thanks.
Of course. This is Jonathan Kirstening.
And this is Audrey Russo.
We're from the Pittsburgh Technology Council. Learn more about us at pghtech.org. And of course, I keep reminding everybody, October the 25th is our Tech 50 event. Biggest night in technology, right there on the heels with the Shale Insight Conference.
Fantastic.
I love it, man. It'll be a great, great night in Pittsburgh tech and energy, as far as that goes. Anyhow, we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. As promised, we have Chris Johnson here from Teletracking Technologies. Audrey, you know how psyched I've been about getting this interview together, right?
I know. You're pretty psyched.
I know. One of Pittsburgh's
coolest
companies.
And why are you so psyched?
Because we get to talk every show, we talk to the best and brightest minds in Pittsburgh, right? It's just the way Tech 5 Radio rolls. And we're just taking it to another level this time.
Yeah, so now we have Chris Johnson here.
I know.
And he's taken over a new leadership role.
Exactly.
With a company called Teletracking.
Absolutely, man.
Hi, Chris.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Exactly. Any time of the day.
This is how hard you work. Yeah. You don't even see the light of day.
He just knows that it's like he's got to be somewhere and do something. No. So, Chris, first of all, congratulations on the new position at Teletracking.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I mean, come on. It's like you got all the switches at your control right now. You can do whatever you want.
That's for sure.
Exactly. Exactly. So what's your background real fast? So our listeners want to know, who is Chris Johnson?
Well, thanks, first of all, for having me. So just give a little background. I've been in Pittsburgh for 3 years now. So prior to that, and that whole time has been with Teletracking.
Great.
Prior to that, I was in Virginia, and I won't go all the way back into my elementary school career. So I'll start
middle school.
In healthcare. So I started my career in healthcare in a small startup in Richmond, Virginia, that was doing something somewhat similar to Teletracking.
Okay.
Somewhat similar, but not exactly. As we were growing that business, we were acquired by GE Healthcare, and I was super excited. I was incredibly excited that I could take what we were trying to solve in healthcare, and we'll talk a little bit about that, I'm sure.
Definitely.
And take it to a grand scale, leveraging GE Healthcare and the work that's happening there. But very quickly, I started seeing that it was more challenging than I thought. I saw that we were spending a lot of time managing, you know, the large bureaucracy of a large corporation, and that's the reality of the situation. And this problem of inefficiency in healthcare, which is what Teletracking attacks, is something that I believe it has to be solved entrepreneurially.
Absolutely.
And we kept seeing this little company in Pittsburgh that kept outflanking and outmaneuvering.
So Teletracking was whipping you.
They were.
So we
came up to Pittsburgh to talk to Michael Zamias, the owner of the company, and find out what was going on. And what I saw and what I learned about his vision of where he wanted to take Teletracking, I decided that this is the place this problem is going to be solved.
I love
it. So I picked up after 8 years at GE Healthcare. And
coming to Pittsburgh.
That's right.
No way. I love that. So what are your thoughts of Pittsburgh?
Wait, so you came to Pittsburgh at Teletracking. What was your role there?
It's actually a very interesting career path through Teletracking. So when I came to Teletracking, I was when I left GE Healthcare, I was a chief technology officer running a large organization. And I talked to Michael, and he said, I like the way you think. I like the way you approach the problem. I have a unique opportunity for you. I'd like you to be the chief of staff for our business.
And
direct reports exactly zero. Mm-hmm. But it's an opportunity to understand our customers, our technology, the problem we're trying to solve, and the way we think about
it. Get under the covers with it.
And so I spent time there.
It is a great role.
And absolutely loved it. It was the best growth opportunity I could have ever had.
It's amazing. In the right place.
With the right mentors.
Right?
That's right.
Well, what did you think of Pittsburgh before you came here? I mean, I'm assuming Pittsburgh wasn't necessarily on your radar screen, but obviously the ability to go to Teletracking was like, nope, this is where it is, and I'm going to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. And I missed, Pittsburgh has a reputation outside of Pittsburgh, and I think a lot of people still equate Pittsburgh to a different time, to tell you the truth. But I came to Pittsburgh.
That's so polite.
Yeah.
That's
well
so
put,
polite.
Chris. Well put.
The good news is I've been a Steelers.
You mean not hell with the lid blown off?
That's right. I've been a Steelers fan since the 70s, so I was able to carry forward. But when I came to Pittsburgh, what I saw was just an amazing booming economy in technology and healthcare, high-tech space. I saw what's happening at CMU and Pitt. And really got to know the neighborhoods in Pittsburgh. My family has absolutely loved Pittsburgh.
That's awesome, man. I like to hear that.
Those are good answers.
You're passing the test so far.
Honest in everything.
Yeah, honest in everything. Really, really good answers. So let's switch in gears for a little bit, and let's talk about, so chief of staff, and then you become president, and how would you describe what it's like to work at Teletracking? Because it's a growth company. Which means that there's a lot of moving pieces and parts and lots of people that you need to recruit, and opportunities are endless.
It is a growth company, and I think one of the biggest learnings I've had is moving out of corporate America into a family office or a family-owned business in large part, which is what represents Teletracking. And so the number one thing that I would say that I've learned at Teletracking is how much focus, and you can obsess on the customer. You can obsess on the customer and solving problems and not obsess on the quarterly earnings report And you know, quite frankly,
right? Isn't that a great relief?
It is a huge relief. I mean, listen, there's great benefits of working for a large corporation, right? You can move the needle on a global scale if you're a company like GE Healthcare. But when it comes to solving a problem from the ground up, defining a market,
right.
A company like Teletracking is where it has to.
You need
where
the
it has
agility of a size of a company like Teletracking to make that happen.
Yep. And the other thing is, you very rarely in your life, and it seems like you guys have been blessed with this, but very rarely in your life do you get to do something that you absolutely love.
That's been me for the past 21 years.
With
people
you love.
Yep. It's such a rare thing.
And that is exactly what I'm able to do with Teletrack. And our team is fantastic. You know, we are growing, and there's challenges.
Right.
There's strains. You know,
of course.
There's strains
right.
around the seams as that company grows.
Right.
But as long as you're willing to, you know, work together, collaborate, and you tear down walls, and you know, we talk about, you know, there's certain ways things are done, the tele way, the Teletracking way.
Mm-hmm. There's a big focus on culture, though. Like, what does that mean?
Tremendous focus on culture.
It's not just, you know, the word.
That's right. And so, you know, Keith Young, who runs our HR, and Michael Zamias, who's the owner of the company, really are chief culture officers and are
right.
very, very focused.
They're setting that tone. And yeah.
And it's a hard way to run a business, to tell you the truth. But it's the greatest way to run a business, as far as I'm concerned, which is an obsession on your team and an obsession on the employees there. Michael has been very focused on, you know, what may seem like a small thing, although I don't think it's a small thing, is things like pays 100% of medical benefets for our employees.
I know.
Because he's
been passionate about that.
Incredibly passionate about it. Understands the burden. You know, working in this business, you understand the burden that healthcare costs put on families.
Exactly.
And what happens there. And we want to take that burden off the shoulders of our employees so they can stay focused on solving the problem. That's just a small example. And then I actually heard on one of your previous shows some commentary around work we've done with Mission of Mercy.
Yep.
And so focus on your communities, the communities in which you work, whether it's Pittsburgh or whether it's other countries. We're in the UK. In Canada, we make similar investments in those communities as well.
When Audrey and I learned about the Mission of Mercy, our minds were blown. We were like, wow, like the amount of effort to make that happen and the positive impact it had. And Teletracking doesn't have to do that, but they do and they did. And it's just that to us was just amazing and just really shows what's going on at that company.
Yeah. And we had 140, something like that, employees that were volunteered their time.
They showed up.
In addition to the dentist.
And the thing that I learned walking away from that and is a real question. I'm not sure who has served more, the people that are serving or the people that were served.
Right.
And
yeah.
You know, it just impacted us tremendously.
Makes
and we look
sense.
Forward to continue to doing it.
Yeah.
I've not seen any examples of that in other cities.
I have not. But we need to make more examples
exactly.
of Mission of Mercy
right?
across
so
this country.
So if you don't know about Mission of Mercy, there's actually a Twitter handle on it. You can go and just explore it, but you can see what they've done to sort of help people who don't have access to dental care. And as someone who lives at the dentist, I can tell you
know
that
how
I would
important
not be alive
that is.
If I didn't have access
Absolutely.
To dental care.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, we're taking a quick break. We're coming back with more Teletracking Technologies and Chris Johnson there. So many great stories to tell. I want to learn more about the technologies you guys are deploying, really how you're just impacting the quality of patients' lives and helping doctors and nurses have more time with their patients, and a little bit more about the culture, about what's making Teletracking a great place to work, and maybe talk about some of the positions we have open. That's a lot to go over. Oh, my goodness. So much going on, but we're so glad to have you here hanging out with us tonight on Tech Vibe Radio. So keep your dial tuned right here. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
And we're from the Pittsburgh Technology Council, and we have awesome members like Teletracking Technologies that are part of what making us do what we do every single day. Learn more about us at pghtech.org. Fly on over to Twitter at pghtech. So glad you can join us tonight here on Tech Vibe Radio. As promised, we are back here with Teletracking Technologies and Chris Johnson, just named president of Teletracking. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
So much fun having you here because there's so much great stuff that's going on within Teletracking. But as I mentioned before, Audrey and I want to nerd out on the problems that Teletracking solves, because these are tough problems and they really impact the quality of people's lives. I mean, this is literally their lives we're talking about here. So let's dive into that. What do you think?
Yeah, perfect. I can talk a little bit about what Teletracking
cool.
does. You know, Teletracking is based on a singular mission to ensure that no patient ever has to wait for the care that they need.
Right.
And, you know, we're focused on a problem that everyone has experienced. Have you ever been to an emergency room and you wait and you wait and you wait?
I once had a friend actually waiting on a gurney for 3 hours, like in a hallway.
It's called boarding.
And so, is that what that is?
It is directly tied. Mortality rates are directly tied to boarding. So every year.
Really?
And so what teletracking focuses on is efficiency and patient flow. And how do you improve the flow of patients through the healthcare system, not just in the hospital?
But exactly.
Boarding that you just mentioned is directly correlated to mortality rates. 37,000 people in the United States alone die.
In a hallway.
Waiting
yeah.
in the hallway in an emergency department.
That's a lot of people.
Unacceptable.
I mean, that's like, that is unacceptable. That's the only way to put it. That's just unacceptable.
That is unacceptable. So what teletracking does by creating visibility in the management of workflows, what's happening in the hospital, we understand mm-hmm. what's happening with the patients, with the doctors, with the nurses, with the other staff, the beds,
right.
the assets and the mm-hmm. equipment in there. And we put a layer of intelligence over top of it. So we understand where the bottlenecks are. We understand where the bottlenecks are going to happen, and we help remove them. And that way you move more patients through.
And that's the patient movement.
That's patient movement. So when we talk about patient flow, it's how do you move people through a system that is built for inefficiency? And so we remove many of those inefficiencies. And so common things that you see is that hospitals that put in teletracking and work with us serve thousands and thousands of more patients every year without adding more beds or more doctors or more staff.
So you got to be more efficient, right?
You have to be more efficient. And if you look at the macro level of the economy, we have $4 trillion that's being spent in healthcare. And it is being spent incredibly inefficiently.
Exactly.
And in the U.S., too many people are being turned away from the care that they need.
Right.
And so
right.
we help those patients get more care.
It's this compounding problem that teletracking is able to start unwinding.
So
it seems like to me.
So how many hospitals are you in the U.S.?
In just a little over 1,000 total that we're contracted with. Teletracking is kind of a new startup, 27 years under our belt, mm-hmm. but we're continuing to grow. We finished our first quarter 2 years ago, and we've entered our second quarter. So we have a little over 1,000 hospitals that we serve, and that is in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. predominantly.
That's a lot of patients then. That's a lot of patients that are being managed more efficiently.
Millions of patients are being served, and millions more are being served that otherwise would not be able to.
And so you have created the technology of that process flow.
We've perfected it. And nothing's ever perfect. You strive towards that over
right.
27 years. So we've taken what we've learned in every one of those hospitals, and we've codified it into an operating platform that underlies everything that happens in the hospital, outside of the hospital, around the care continuum. And the way we like to think about it, we're continuing to expand into this concept of home to home. From the time you leave home to the time you get back home,
right.
God willing, that we are removing the hurdles and obstacles to your care.
And so what are your customers saying to you?
Well, we have our customers are saying, long-term customers are telling us that if you take teletracking out, we can no longer operate. We can no longer serve. New customers are telling us that if at the current trajectory, hospitals, 60% of U.S. hospitals will be in the red by 2025 if they don't make a marked improvement in efficiency in their systems. So it is something that everyone needs.
Yeah. It's an imperative for the ones that aren't using it.
It is an imperative.
To have better management.
And we're able to make it very personal, too, when we talk about why people at teletracking come to work every day. Because everyone's experienced this problem. And one day, your parents, your child, you, your friend is going to be in a hospital, and you want teletracking in that hospital.
I know. I want a sticker on the window that says, powered by teletracking. So when I'm rolling in there, I know I'm getting the best service.
We're working on that.
If that sticker's not there, I'm not going.
Teletracking inside.
The seal of approval.
The seal of approval. Right. I know I'm in good hands at that point. I'm just saying.
So what kinds of people work at teletracking? Do you have a lot of people in software development? Do you have business process and analysts?
Yeah, we really across the board. I mean, we started as a technology company from the ground up. So we have a lot of technologists, and they're primarily here in Pittsburgh, which is a great technology market, increasingly competitive. But we think we have a good story in what we do, and we're a good draw for technical talent here. But we have people that are field engineers that work in the hospitals. About a dozen years ago, Michael Zamias, the owner of the company, made a decision that we need to hire more clinicians. People that have worked in the hospital.
Right. Actually, the people that have been there, done that, and really know the pain point.
And
right?
that has fundamentally changed our approach, because when those people, which are in our technology organization, they're in our advisory and consulting, they're in our implementation teams, they bring a perspective of what it's like to work in that environment. And that fundamentally changed the way teletracking interacted with our customers about 12 years ago.
Very, very cool.
I know, it's so interesting to have the leadership people who have been practitioners and are no longer. Because we're seeing that a lot in healthcare.
You're seeing that a lot, right? In healthcare. And, you know, it's funny. We actually consider it one of our marks, our measures of success. Right. And so many of the people that come to work for Teletrack and that have been clinicians have been very successful in the hospital systems that they work in. And they want to do more of that. They want to reach beyond, you know, the four
beyond
walls, beyond the walls of that. But one of the measures of success for Teletracking, from my perspective, and this is shared with Michael and others in our leadership team, is today doctors and nurses are discouraging their children from going into healthcare.
Oh,
are
yeah.
They?
Because of the burdens to
actually
care, the hurdles that are there.
Mm-hmm.
And so a measure of success from our standpoint is when doctors and nurses are encouraging their children to go into healthcare so they can be healers.
Exactly.
Right?
We really have suffered these last two decades.
We've suffered these last two decades, and you know, it's unfortunate, I think, is the United States. I mean, we rank 44 out of 51 countries in efficiency in healthcare.
See,
you know, right
just,
behind the Dominican Republic and right ahead of Bulgaria,
which
is unacceptable to me when you think about we've been able to put a man on the
right.
moon. But not able to solve this problem.
But you guys are starting to solve it. It's in place. It's happening in 1,000 hospitals.
Making a tremendous impact. We have story after story of lives that are being saved.
Right.
And we had a good conversation with someone who was running a hospital, and I'll give you the abbreviated version. You explained where a child had ingested rat poison, and they needed to get this child to a trauma center, and the one phone call into our command center, which is kind of the centralized place in which
I've seen pictures of that command center, and it's a command center.
It is a command center. Through one phone call, able to get that patient, that child, into the right place with the right staff, with the right equipment, with the right meds, things of that nature. And it took 15 minutes off of what otherwise was a well-oiled machine.
Exactly.
But that 15 minutes was all that child needed.
Exactly, to save
that
child's
life. And otherwise
would
have walked out.
Wow, man.
We have story after story. And
that's why people get pumped up to come to work like that.
Absolutely.
Because you know every day you're saving someone's life, man.
That's exactly right. Hospital operations doesn't have that shine. It doesn't really come out like that. But at the end of the day, it's solving one of the greatest problems we see in healthcare. And it is literally saving lives every day.
I see.
So that inspires us.
Absolutely. We've got just a few minutes left. And I'm like, oh, man. Like, there's just so much more we could be talking about that I just want to know more. And how you guys, like, what's in the future now? What are you working on for the next 6 months, the next year that you want to roll out in the hospital?
And what about people who want to work for you?
Yeah.
One, go to teletracking.com.
Okay.
Absolutely, go to teletracking.com. I was actually needed to say that earlier,
absolutely.
I think. But we are hiring, and we're continuing to hire. We're hiring technologists. We're hiring project managers, program managers, skilled clinicians who want to be able to put their skills to work there. And you take a look at that website, and you'll see everything that we're doing. The types of people that are a draw to Teletracking are people that are very mission-oriented. And that they actually want to solve a problem. And this is a very real problem that will affect everyone in this room, everyone of your family at some point. And if you can be a part of making that better, if you want to be a part of making that better, Teletracking is a great place to work.
Absolutely. Look for that seal on the
hats
door.
Hats off to you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
It's awesome stuff. So you've been in Pittsburgh for 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you're having a pretty good time. What would you say has been the best thing about coming to Pittsburgh? You know, of course, working for Teletracking is giving you all this great experience. But what else about Pittsburgh do you think has been really fun and great for you so far?
I'll give you two things.
Yeah.
One, just from my family standpoint, moving to Pittsburgh, tremendous people. And that's not just being gratuitous. I've loved
that's
Pittsburgh.
Great.
I love walking down the street. I love the people in our neighborhood. They've been so welcoming.
What part of town are you living in?
I'm north Franklin Park.
Excellent,
Franklin
man.
Park area.
Mm-hmm.
So work downtown. And the second is the community. And it's not just beyond just the people. But the interaction I have with other entrepreneurial companies, with large world-class health systems that are right here in Pittsburgh, and the universities, and watching them come together, and quite frankly, Pittsburgh Technology Council. Here, my shameless plug.
You can plug,
real.
Man. We like that.
The Pittsburgh Technology Council, I've been in a lot of cities. I've traveled a lot, particularly in my last
For sure.
career. I see what's happening here is something that every other city I've been in is trying to replicate in some form or fashion.
Interesting.
So it's pretty spectacular.
No, that's awesome, man. We appreciate it. And I sense we have a permanent Pittsburgher here, Audrey.
We're going to have to make
exactly.
it.
I think you do.
Yeah, you're not going anywhere, man. We're keeping you. You're ours now, man. We love
it. You get a chance to work with some great people. So.
Yeah. So it's good. Awesome. Teletracking.com. You can learn about the company, the employment opportunities. It's such a cool thing. I'm so glad you got to hang out with us tonight, Chris.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. Hey, we're taking a quick break. We're coming right back with another Chris. Chris Pacioni from Luma Institute.
I know. It's Chris Day.
It is Chris Day here on Tech Vibe Radio.
That was a cool update. Teletracking.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're taking a quick break. As I said, this is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
Learn more about the Pittsburgh Technology Council by going to pghtech.org. And rumor has it, teletracking is a finalist at Tech 50 this year on October the 25th.
Yeah, so coming right around the bend.
Oh, it's here before you know it, guys. I'm looking forward to it. Welcome back, everybody. You are dialed into Tech Vibe Radio. And Audrey, you got this groove thing going on.
I was making fun of you.
I know. What's up with that?
We have a serious guest in the house, and I'm trying to show him some respect.
Serious. I unbuttoned my top button.
You did.
I'm ready to roll here. You guys.
Dude.
Wearing short sleeves. Come on.
It's all good, man.
Hey.
So we have Chris Pacioni here from the Luma Institute. And just so our listeners know, I happen to know this guy, and I've known him for a while. He is my brother-in-law.
Okay.
And I won't hold
full
that
disclosure.
Against you.
Full disclosure.
Exactly.
I didn't want to
Exactly, bro.
I didn't want to have to bring that up. No. I was going to play dumb.
No, I just want people to know it's all in the cool.
Why?
He's not on the show because he's my brother-in-law. He's on the show because he's running a really cool company.
Yeah,
you know, for up to
true.
Me, I'd
that's
be like,
right.
I'd be yep. like, no way, man.
Everybody just tuned out.
Exactly. They're like, what? What's he doing? No, so Chris, Luma Institute. How long how long has this been off the ground for now?
Mm-hmm. 8 years. This August was our 8th birthday.
My. God.
Wow. I remember when it was pre.
Yeah, right.
The pre-birth.
Yep, yep. We were incubating it over at Maya. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
2008
was
for 2 years.
Of the early.
You knew about this.
Well, early
the
writers.
Colonel.
Yeah, yeah. She has.
I was one of the early writers in with Bill Lucas.
Oh, yeah. Bill.
So, Chris.
Bill's still around, too. He's
I know
done great,
he is.
Great work. He does.
He's very happy.
Yeah.
I check in on him. Just so you know.
She does, just to make sure everything's cool.
I want to know what's going on.
So Chris, tell our listeners, the Luma Institute.
Luma Institute.
Give us the elevator pitch here.
The elevator pitch. Okay, let me get out my paper.
Exactly.
Let me read from my script.
Great sound effects, man. Yeah.
Just kidding. So we are a leading and global provider of design thinking system.
Yeah.
Design thinking courses and design thinking software that help companies, you know, basically do three things: be more agile and collaborative, be more innovative, and be more customer-centric. Those are the three big things a lot of big corporations and small corporations are trying to do these days.
And they all struggle with it, and they don't
it's
know how to
stuff.
Attack it, right? And a lot of it's intertwined, too, obviously.
Yeah.
It's and
also,
you help them with that.
It's not just for leadership, right? I mean, I think that's the cool thing.
It's for the whole company. I mean, a lot of the companies that we work with are really about a whole culture transformation, is like how in general.
Right.
Do we be more innovative on a day-to-day basis, you know,
mm-hmm.
where innovation is business as usual? Or how do we be more customer-centric? How do we put the needs of our various stakeholders and different kinds of users and partners first?
Right.
And, you know, how could be more collaborative, like cross silos, break down the silos, because, you know, all the books say, you know, the best innovations come from multiple minds coming together, the cross-pollination,
mm-hmm.
that thing. And design thinking sort of provides a platform and a way of working and thinking and doing for people from various walks of life to come together and do that kind of stuff.
So design thinking has really become popular these days. Now, so being my brother-in-law, I was having dinner with you a few weeks ago and my nephew.
Mom's
exactly. Step outside here, Audrey.
Step outside.
So
I obviously was not at that dinner.
One of my favorite nephews, Leo, was taking, he's in the, sixth grade?
He's gone seventh grade
now.
He just started,
And he's in a design class.
Yeah, up at Avonworth,
So at a young age, just saying that this is where it's coming.
He's in a design class?
Yeah, I noticed on his, I guess his syllabus or his classes for the year when he got it in the mail that it's only a quarter of a credit, but he'll be taking a class called Design and Innovation. later this year.
In the seventh grade.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have to
run into the superintendent a couple days ago.
I think you need to review the curriculum.
I was going to say, yeah, you need to go.
Oh, they're doing great stuff. Bill, actually, who you mentioned before, does a lot of work with Avonworth, and we do a lot of, we support a lot of their programs and the teachers, not only at Avonworth, but a lot of the local school districts trying to integrate this stuff into the curriculum. So happy to see it.
So, Chris, what is design thinking for our listeners out there? What does that mean?
Besides a buzzword.
Besides a buzzword, there's some actual meat behind this.
Right. I mean, Luma likes to refer to it, what design thinking is referring to, as human-centered design, but whatever. There's numerous handlers for it. Okay, design thinking is the most popular one because it was on the cover of Harvard Business Review several times.
Exactly,
so that's the one we're going to go with.
Okay.
I don't like it much, but it works.
Right.
So, but what it is basically it's an approach to work that is inventing new things, developing, innovating new things. It basically emphasizes three things. Five things.
Five
whole things.
Good
right?
Lord,
and so stay with me here.
Okay.
All right. So it emphasizes, number one, problem finding and problem understanding and problem framing, right? So it gets people having those early conversations when we're doing the work, like, what problem are you trying to solve here? The world is littered with great stories about how teams did a good job solving the wrong problem.
Exactly.
So getting on the same page and figuring out what is it that we're really trying to solve here is aligning that across organization is very critical. And design thinking helps teams have those critical conversations at the strategic level and the tactical level. The second thing is deep, deep stakeholder empathy. Not just user empathy, but stakeholders. I mean, when you're designing something new, you got to really take into account the multiple stakeholders. That is, people who have a stake in the solution.
Exactly.
And it's not just end users. It could be value-added resellers. It could be the organization itself.
Right.
And how do you understand what everybody needs out of this thing? Right. And so that's tough stuff. And
that's really tough. I'm thinking about it for our organization.
Yeah. Right.
Where we represent like over 200,000 individuals.
Right. They all want the same thing?
I know.
No.
I mean, so that's really...
If only they did.
Right. And it's complex, but you shouldn't shy away from complexity, right? Remember, Maya's old taming. You got to tame that complexity.
Right.
You got to get in there and say, well, what's really going on here? So that's the second thing. The third thing is just imagination, envisioning the future.
Okay.
Being able to... That's part and parcel of what innovation is bringing something that hasn't existed yet into existence.
Gotcha.
And so that requires visual and imagination.
Right.
I think the fourth thing is rapid iteration and development, right? So that's not unique. And a lot of these aren't unique to design thinking. It's just a language that helps it. But that's not unique to design thinking. It just helps teams build, test, learn, and get in that iterative loop early on in the process. Mm-hmm. In fact, my belief is that, you know, the old saying used to be, whoever's first to market wins. It's whoever can iterate the fastest wins. Your ability and your team's coming together to make, learn, what did we do wrong,
quickly.
And do it again, and be quick about it is what organizations looking for. And I'd say
it's hard to be nimble.
Yeah.
You have
that agility.
Large constituents.
Absolutely.
Or you have these large bunch of people.
It is. And that gets into an all other conversation, which we probably won't have time today, but how you structure your organization, which we're not experts in, but we've run into the way you're, the OD, the organizational development factors in that. And I think the fifth thing is just multi-disciplinary collaboration.
Yeah.
So how do you get different silos, engineering, supply chain, back office, front office, designers all working together on a problem? Because usually problems are multifaceted and you need everybody kind of working together. So the solution actually fits with multiple facets of the organization.
People have different agendas and expectations.
Yeah, exactly.
And it just becomes all the more complex.
Yeah, design thinking really basically provides a language or way of working to have those critical conversations and make judgments and decisions you have to make in the design process. So.
Maybe go through like a way that you actually work with a company.
That's
maybe a quick way
expect.
So our listeners can be like, how
does that work?
Do you engage?
Yeah.
So we're talking to Chris Pacioni. And if you're near your computer or anything, log into
www.lumainstitute.com.
All one word?
Yeah. Luma-institute.com, I think.
You can do both.
Spell it, but I just type in Luma Institute and Google.
It just goes right there,
you'll find it.
Simple as that. Absolutely, man. No.
So the question was, how do we work with different organizations?
Yeah.
So,
scenario, so our listeners can really get that idea.
Our niche is scaling this stuff. Everybody and their grandmother offers design thinking workshops, and a lot of them are quite good. And we saw this years ago, back in 2012. We said, you know, design thinking workshops, it's definitely a trend. And it's not just a trend, but it's actually good stuff. This isn't going away. But that's going to become a bit of a commodity. And the other thing we learned early on is that if you're trying to inject this into the DNA of your organizations, you know, cheap dipping 40,000 people or 400,000 people through TD workshops isn't going to get it done.
No.
It's part of that. So what we try to do with organizations is set up whole design thinking programs. We're really trying to inject these ways of working into the sort of business as usual, into daily activity. So people are using it on a daily basis.
Right, because part of how they just get business done, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so the way we do that often is that we have a sort of three-pronged approach. The first is we certainly will do workshops. They're important, but we understand that a lot of people in the organization have maybe gone to workshops at the Stanford D School or taken at IDEO or their last organization.
Or they're overdosed.
Right.
Yeah, there's a little bit of workshop fatigue out there, but we do them. We have practitioner certification programs. But a lot of times what we do in terms of scaling is we quickly transition that teaching over to the organization. So we have basically large organizations we tend to work with.
So you pass it on. It's train the trainer.
Train the trainer, exactly. Right. And we just don't do workshops, but we also integrate these 90-day programs where we provide venues for peer-to-peer learning. So you take a workshop and we say, okay, go apply a recipe. Go apply some of the methods we just taught you to a real problem. And then come back in 30 days and share it with your peers.
Share it, right.
And let's see how it went. What was good? What was bad? What was hard? How to go? And so that we begin that sort of cross-disciplinary pollination of ideas and sharing and that kind of learning. And the third thing we do is provide them with Luma Workplace, which is our SaaS, our software as a service.
That's, I think, is so cool because you can access the software online use it to guide yourself through
accessing?
The exercises.
You're accessing just-in-time education. So let's say you want to run a session next week. Let's say you've got like 12 people coming in for an ideation session or an alignment session. And you go to the site and search our hundreds of different recipes. There's just combinations of the methods we teach.
I get hungry every time I go there.
Yeah, that's right. and see which recipe kind of fits the sort of goal what you're trying to do in the course. And you go into that and there's videos and links to templates and things that basically help you do that.
Yeah.
Just because you took a workshop 2 years ago,
we actually
mean you're good
used
at
it. We used it for the 40x80 meeting that we had, and it was so easy to use. And
that's great.
I appreciate it. It's good to hear that.
We snapped it all together, and we had a really effective meeting by using your stuff. Which I want to remind people: we've got about a minute or so left. You can be an organization of any size to use this. You don't have to be a giant IBM. You can be a 4-person outfit and get benefit from this, which I think is just exciting.
Yeah, we do a lot of work with educational institutions, nonprofit, as well as the big companies.
Exactly.
As well. So yeah, everybody's getting value out of it. So that's really the key. Is like, what are we doing for our customers, not on day two of the workshop, but day 2000?
Exactly. And it's something you want to integrate along the life cycle of the company. So it's not something you learn once and kind of decide you got to use it, but you learn it and you live it.
And that's how we learn, right?
Right.
If we're experts here in something, it's because we've been doing it all our lives. And
Excellent.
So we want to provide those tools constantly.
Chris Pacioni, my brother-in-law, and also the CEO of the Luma Institute.
Aww. No nepotism here.
Yeah, none at all. No, we think this is such cool stuff. I mean, Audrey,
thanks
goes
for being
back.
Here.
Oh, Audrey, and happy birthday.
All the good stuff. Now, Chris, thank you. Really great stuff with Luma. We think what you guys are doing is really transformational and something every company should be checking out.
Well, we appreciate being here, and we're proud to be headquartered in Pittsburgh.
That's
thanks
what
a lot.
It's all about, man. Another Tech Vibe Radio here and gone, Audrey. But next Friday, as I always remind our listeners, come on back. More folks like Chris building great companies here in Pittsburgh. We put the focus on them every Friday night here on Tech Vibe. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
We're from the Pittsburgh Technology Council. Learn more about us at pghtech.org and follow us on Twitter at pghtech.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.